This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. You can follow me on Twitter at @1TimMurray. Most importantly, ladies and gentlemen, let's keep it rolling. Keep the momentum happening. Appreciate the tweets, the texts from folks listening into the podcast. Please rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It's been a great start to the off season, and I'm staying true to my word. Another podcast in your feed, and we'll do it again next week as well. So if you have any requests, I'll do my best to oblige and bring in some new guests. But Parker Fleming, friend of the podcast, he's going to jump on the show here at StatsoWar on Twitter. Many of you know the Twitter handle, know the beard, and know the sheets, the projections he puts out each and every week. So we're going to talk some SEC with him. We're going to talk a little Group of Five, as well as the Big 12, which continues to be one of the most fascinating conferences out there. I wanted to open up the show today with just a little thing that popped into my brain regarding the four best teams in the country entering this year. And that would be, in no particular order, Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, and Oregon. Now, are they going to finish that way? No, not necessarily. But based off a power rating standpoint, based off of futures odds, those are the four best teams in the country. Using DraftKings, Georgia plus 320, Ohio State 4-1, Texas plus 750, Oregon plus 850. And then after that, it drops off to 14-1. And the reason I bring it up, just as you think about getting to the window on who you ultimately want to bet to win the national championship. And last week we had Paul Stone talk about a long shot flyer on Utah at 100-1. And why he wanted to make that bet was the Big 12 champion is going to get a bye into the quarterfinals, more than likely. I would be surprised if Liberty or Boise State, Memphis, UTSA, et cetera, was able to obtain said bye like a Cincinnati would have a couple years ago. Because remember the stipulation, in order to get a bye, you have to win your conference championship. So Notre Dame, of course, has no opportunity to earn a bye. But is that such a bad thing? The reason I bring that up, those four teams, Georgia, Texas, Ohio State, Oregon, guess what? If this was last year, be no big deal. Georgia could win the SEC. Texas could win the Big 12. Ohio State could win the Big 10. Oregon could win the Pac-12. And they all get byes. But now, Oregon's in the Big 10. Texas is in the SEC. So at max, two of the four best teams in the country will earn a bye into the quarterfinals. Could be less, you know? Alabama last year beat Georgia in the SEC championship game to earn their way into the college football playoff. Ohio State, of course, lost to Michigan. Oregon lost multiple times to Washington. So things happen, but it is kind of interesting to note that will we see the change at some point? Probably, but entering this year, the ACC, the Big 12 will get a bye. Now, the rules state it is the top four conference champion. So once again, in theory, a Group of Five team could earn that. But it is just looking at the odds and the power ratings that are out there. And we talked to Brad Powers. One of his best bets on this podcast a couple weeks ago was Oregon to make the playoff at minus 210, which has since moved a little bit. But he felt like they were more on par on the level of a Georgia and Ohio State than they were a Texas. And while that's still very well could come home, only two of these teams are going to get a bye. So college football very rarely is chalky all the way through. You will get some chalk, but one of these teams might not even make their conference championship game. But if we're sitting first weekend of December, Georgia versus Texas in Atlanta, Ohio State versus Oregon in Indianapolis, one of those teams, two of those teams, will be playing 2 weeks later. So just keep that in the back of your mind as you get to the window and thinking about placing a futures bet out there. Speaking of Oregon, I know some game of the year lines have been out for a little while, but it just got the gears going again when I saw the Circa GOY lines come out, and Oregon was a 1-point underdog to Ohio State. The last time the Ducks were a home dog, 2018. October 13th, 2018, they were a 3.5-point underdog to Washington. They actually won that game in overtime, 30-27. They've been an underdog just 9 times at home since 2005. They are 4-5 ATS in those 9 particular instances. That line could obviously flip. They could close a favorite, but it was interesting to note that Oregon was a home dog in Autzen. Game hasn't been announced yet. Time hasn't been announced yet, but likely a primetime kickoff there in Autzen for the Buckeyes to head out to take on the Ducks. I mentioned we're going to talk some Group of Five with Parker Fleming here, and something that I've mentioned on the podcast and I keep circling back to is the Group of Five participant in the college football playoff. And I'm excited to see it. They're most likely going to be the 12 seed, have to go on the road to, you know, maybe Georgia or Ohio State, Notre Dame, whoever it may be, whoever's the fifth best team in the country based off of the committee, or might even be higher than that, right? Because the top four teams are all conference champions. So you could get the SEC runner-up, Big Ten runner-up, Notre Dame, whatever it may be. But I look at Liberty, and last year, the Liberty Flames went undefeated in the regular season and earned the Group of Five bid to the New Year's Six, edging out SMU. And I thought that was incorrect. I thought the right team to go should have been SMU, but such is life. And ultimately, it was Liberty who got the opportunity to go to the Fiesta Bowl, where they ended up getting absolutely obliterated by Oregon, and they edged them out. If you remember, SMU was 24th, Liberty was 23rd. Liberty at 13-0 got to go to the Fiesta Bowl. Now, the committee has a bigger task at hand because it's no longer a bowl game, which, you know, no knock on Tulane and their win over USC a couple years ago, or, you know, UCF and, you know, their undefeated season. It's different now. Now you've got a legitimate shot to win a national championship, and the committee needs to seriously consider how Liberty is looked at. Liberty enters this year with a win total of 10.5 at DraftKings, and it's even money to the over. They are a team that Bill Conley has a 41.7% chance of going 11-1 or better based against all other G5 teams. That's 28% better than the next best team, which would be James Madison at 13.1%. Boise State, week two, goes to Autzen to take on Oregon. Memphis, week three, goes to Tallahassee to take on Florida State. Liberty, September 28th, goes to Boone to take on App State. App State's good. They're the favorite to win the Sun Belt. But Liberty's conference, their strength of schedule is laughable. Entering this year, Phil Steele, Brad Powers, and Kelly Ford all have Liberty as the easiest schedule in the country. Bill Conley, though, he believes in that Liberty schedule. 133 out of 134. If you look at who the best team in their conference is outside of Liberty, according to Athlon in their preseason magazine, that would be Western Kentucky, 83rd in the country. According to Phil Steele in his mag, Jacksonville State, 95th in the country. Bill Conley high on the Hilltoppers, though. He has them 60th heading into this year. Liberty, this is what Bill Conley said in his S&P Plus update post-spring. Quote, Liberty again has a pillowy soft schedule with zero projected top 50 opponents and only two projected higher than 93rd. It does the Flames a major disservice, really, because they should have a borderline top 40 team and could handle something stronger than the second weakest schedule in the FBS. Combined with last year's poor showing in the Fiesta Bowl against Oregon, I'm guessing the committee might not smile on an unbeaten Liberty team if a one-loss champion from one of the other conferences is an option, at least not if that team has a schedule like that of Boise State or Memphis. And here's the thing. Boise State, who is believed to be, based off of preseason power ratings, the best G5 team out there. We're going to talk about the Broncos in a little bit with Parker Fleming. Bill Conley has him 38th. Phil Steele has him 39th. Kelly Ford has him 38th. So in that top 40 ballpark, a team that brings in Malachi Nelson from USC, a former five-star, Ashton Jeanty, projected to be maybe a first-round pick at running back. They've got it ready to go. But they also go to Autzen week two against Oregon. Open up the season against Georgia Southern. Tricky spot week one with Oregon waiting there in the wings. A Friday night game against UNLV. Both Oregon State and Washington State. Granted, both of them come to the Smurf turf. Does Boise State need to go 11 or 12-1 to surpass a likely undefeated Liberty team? Can they afford two losses? Last year, the AAC champion SMU had two losses, and they got left out behind Liberty. They were a team that got hot at the right time, and it felt like they should earn that opportunity in the New Year Six. Their two losses were to Power Five teams in Oklahoma and TCU. They went undefeated in conference play. They beat Tulane on their field to win the AAC championship game, got left out because of Liberty being undefeated. Speaking of the AAC, a team like Memphis. Memphis, week three, you got to go on the road to Florida State. You play the perceived three best teams in the American Athletic Conference all on the road this year in South Florida, UTSA, and Tulane. And oh, by the way, then you have to do it again in the conference championship game the following week. It's going to be a really fascinating discussion and situation if Liberty goes undefeated once again in the regular season with a schedule versus a CUSA conference that is a makeshift conference that looks like it is just a bunch of new FCS to FBS teams. So I'm not trying to knock Liberty, and maybe they will prove us wrong. Caden Salter is back. But last year we learned, even though SMU lost their bowl game, I totally recognize that. They lost the Fenway Bowl to Boston College. SMU should have got the opportunity over Liberty. And with that schedule, Liberty, boy, they better impress, because it's going to be hard to convince us that they would be more deserving over an AAC team or a Mountain West team to get into the college football playoff. Parker Fleming coming up next. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, as promised, one of my favorites, Parker Fleming, aka Stats O War on Twitter. Check out the podcast. It is on YouTube, BetUS NCAA, talking all things college football. Parker, always love breaking it down. It's almost sheet time, man. You getting them ready? Getting ready to fire out to the people?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Working on some graphics, trying to stay up with the times, make them a little sexier, and automate them and make my life a little easier. So it's definitely dusting off the code, getting stuff ready. But man, I'm looking forward to it. We got some great games immediately, you know, week zero, week one, and it's getting a little closer every day.
Yeah, a lot to get to with you. We were texting back and forth with some angles to discuss. We're going to talk Big 12 because I almost feel like everyone who jumps on the podcast we had last week, we were talking extensively about the Big 12 last week. So always fun to jump into it a little bit more in depth. We'll talk a little G5 as well. That was part of my open. But let's head into the SEC. And Ole Miss is a team that a lot of people are gravitating towards because of what they've continued to do in the portal this year, according to 247 Sports, number one portal class. Obviously, they did lose Quinshon Judkins. He goes up to Ohio State, but you go out and get Walter Nolan. A lot of other big-time pieces come in. Jackson Dart is back for another year. Their running back class, running back room, I should say, of Ulysses Bentley coming back, Parker, and then you bring in Rashad Amos, who I think committed about seven different schools this offseason. He has now landed in Ole Miss, and then Logan Diggs, who I think is dealing with some injuries. You go out and you get Wells from South Carolina to pair with Trey Harris, and 83% of their production, according to Bill Conley, is coming back. So we look at this Ole Miss team, you know, depending on where you look, pretty regularly in the top 10 from power ratings. Let's start with Ole Miss. 9.5 is their win total. How are you looking at the Rebels in 2024?
Man, I think what they've done is so great. And I think they're really analytical in the sense that they had a good sense of what they needed. They made one of the most groundbreaking choices we've seen to let Quinshon Judkins go and use that money elsewhere. So really interesting, really does feel like an all-in year for Ole Miss. You know, you know as well as I do that if they don't win this year, the boosters might start spending on the tailgates again as opposed to spending on the players. So really interesting situation. We were talking on the BetUS show a couple of weeks ago about would you rather bet Ole Miss to make the playoff or Ole Miss with 10 wins or over that. And I think it's actually interesting because 10-2, they could make the playoff, but I think it depends on what that 10-2 is. They're certainly going to be really, really good. I do like the depth at running back and kind of the diversification on the defensive side of things. Like you look last year, you know, they were 58th in EPA per rush allowed. The pass rush was pretty good. Princely from Florida is going to make that even better and give them some defensive help. They are kind of playing roulette in the secondary, bringing, you know, four or five guys in at corner. I'm sure they'll rotate them. That will be a weakness, but they should be able to score as much as possible. My biggest question for Ole Miss is really what Jackson Dart is, Tim. And I'm interested in your thought on this too. Yeah. My theory is kind of the what if for Ole Miss that makes me a little scared is like, what if Jackson Dart is not really an amazing quarterback so much as he's just a consistent, experienced quarterback and the quarterback class is thin? He's being kind of artificially inflated. He might not actually be enough to really get them where they need to go because this offense is going to be so quarterback dependent. Of course, we saw him have a great game against a good defense in the bowl game against Penn State. They finished 21st in EPA per pass, 15th in EPA per rush. I think they're a really solid team. And what really excites me about them is kind of the diversity of potential. There's so many guys that give them a high ceiling, and then you bring in like a Walter Nolan and get that interior pressure on the defensive line that's really just going to disrupt opponent run games, disrupt opponent pass games, really stress those offensive lines. I think if they can play consistently with Dart, hit those home run plays, and then on defense, just limit that explosive ceiling, cause some of those negative plays more than they did last year, and get into that top 30 of rushing defense, I think they're going to be really, really hard to beat week in, week out.
Yeah, you know, Jackson Dart is fascinating to me from a Heisman standpoint, where he's around 15-1. We know that Lane Kiffin is not going to take the foot off the gas. You look at the schedule, very manageable to start. First, you know, I guess you go on the road to Wake Forest in week three, but let's be honest, there'll probably be more Ole Miss fans there than Demon Deke fans. Then you get Kentucky at home, South Carolina, LSU back-to-back in early October. Your bye week, you get Oklahoma at home, so no Texas, no Alabama for Ole Miss this year. They do have to go host Georgia, which will be just an incredible atmosphere. But with the returning production, and what's been interesting to kind of look at is those quarterbacks entering year two, those transfer portal quarterbacks, Parker, entering year two and how they've, you know, really elevated their play, whether it be Jaden Daniels a year ago, or, I mean, I'm not comparing him to Joe Burrow, but Joe Burrow, the leap that he made from year one to year two at LSU. So we've seen massive jumps, and you're right. I mean, this is a team that has gone all in with the three-headed monster, so to speak, in the running back room. They, you know, Trey Harris was a late addition last year, started to get it going. The transfer from UTSA. Then they bring in Juice Wells, who is a stud. I think he was first team all SEC. They bring in the edge rusher from Florida in addition to Walter Nolan. So I understand the expectations being there. So, you know, to your point about 10-2, does it get it done? You wonder too about the playoff. Does 9-3 potentially get it done? You know, LSU, Georgia, Oklahoma, they don't have a crazy daunting schedule, but, you know, -130 to make the playoff versus over 9.5 even money at Circa is kind of a fascinating discussion. What you would rather do, but I'm kind of like you, man. I'm in on this Ole Miss team. I think they're going to be a lot of fun to watch. You know, Pete Golding year two of being the defensive coordinator. So you bring back a ton of experience. I think top 15 or so in experience. Add in the best portal class in the country. It does feel like this is kind of, you know, playoff or bust. There's a lot of teams in that camp this year, and Ole Miss obviously is, I don't even know if it's playoff or bust, Parker. It might be, you know, win a couple games and bust for Ole Miss.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with just the concentration of talent and good call out on Trey Harris there, you know, guy who's climbing up NFL draft boards, looks really good. I'm interested to see what Wells can do. Harris was the only kind of involved guy on Ole Miss's team last year that had over 3 yards per route run. Remember, 4 is kind of God tier for that productivity. 3 is very, very good. 2 is like, eh, you're kind of around. So they basically had Harris and then a bunch of 2s. I wonder if they can get Wells involved enough to kind of balance it out. You might see Harris's yards per route run come down a little bit, but him be more efficient, and Wells really give that credible second threat on offense, spread him out, let Dart make those reads, use that experience to his advantage. You know, I can very clearly, Ole Miss is an easy team to talk me into the ceiling of, right?
Yeah.
With the versatility in offense and then just the offensive line, we'll note 3 new starters on the offensive line. I meant to say defense there. 3 new starters on the offensive line maybe give you some trouble, but we've seen Kiffin get the ball out quickly, scheme around that, figure out ways to mitigate some of that pass rush that they're going to face. But yeah, schedule lines up favorably. They have just an absolute critical mass of talent at the top of their development cycle. This is the year. I think it is a fun game to ask yourself, would I rather bet Ole Miss ATS every week or bet Ole Miss to make the playoff or you know, there? But I think they're definitely a team that the market's kind of catching up on for playoff. But man, their explosive ceiling so high early in the season, you might see them put up kind of comic book numbers against some of these bad teams and get some wonky prices. But if they lose a game early, I think you could absolutely buy back in and know that they're going to get it straightened out, know that these guys are all going to gel, and down the stretch, they're going to be humming.
Yeah, and we're going to get to a fun conversation with the Big 12 and hypotheticals of how many team will make the playoff, because you look at the SEC from a power rating standpoint, and I mentioned this in the open, where you've got Georgia and Texas in pretty much everyone's power ratings, top 4, however you want to place them. One of those teams isn't going to get a bye. And I heard this mentioned, I apologize who said this, but you know, is there a part of Ole Miss that doesn't even want to go to the SEC championship game where, hey man, let's let you guys duke it out. We know we'll play opening weekend at home. We'll get a good crowd. So it's fascinating, this new world that we're walking into, the expanded playoff with the home game and the byes and how teams are going to go about it, because the SEC is only going to get one bye, and that may change down the road. But as of right now, that's the way it is. And, you know, Ole Miss, Texas, Georgia, only one of them is going to get a bye. So that's going to be, you know, kind of fascinating, Parker. Another team that intrigues you and maybe hasn't gotten the same hype as a team like Ole Miss is Tennessee. So Tennessee a year ago, you know, ends up going 9-4, wins their bowl game over Iowa, shuts out Iowa, which, you know, a handful of teams can do in their sleep. But now they change from Joe Milton to Nico, the highly, highly touted recruit. And you look at this offense under Josh Heupel, and the pieces that are there. Week 2, you take on NC State. This is going to be a very intriguing game. You know, NC State, a team that I think is getting some buzz out there. You know, your game of the year market has Tennessee as a 4.5-point favorite on a neutral in Charlotte. Your SEC schedule, you've got Oklahoma on the road to open things up September 21st. You get Alabama at home. You do have to go to Georgia, but you get the beautiful road game, and I put up air quotes, against Vanderbilt, where that'll be what, 90% Rocky Top fans there, especially that late in the season. So they do get that beautiful, you know, piece there. Brew McCoy is back. So Tennessee's a team I know that intrigues you. Right now, the market to make the playoff plus 180, win total sitting at 9, even to the over on this Vols team. So, you know, the question is, when you're betting into these futures markets, do you see them more likely 10 or 8 wins based off of the talent heading into this year?
Yeah, a couple of things I like about Tennessee are kind of seeing their defensive progression under Heupel. Obviously, their first year, they were in the hundreds of defensive pass efficiency allowed. And man, that's just really, really rough. They took a big step in 22 and then in 23 regressed a little bit, but I still think they're capable. You know, they got some guys, maybe they're going to get gelled in there and working in rotation a little bit better on the back half. Obviously, James Pierce, you know, looking at maybe a first overall pick on the defensive line, really kind of changes the equation of the pass game for them there. And so I like the consistency out of the defense and for them to take a step forward. Then you look at the offense and you kind of think about two things. One, Milton's kind of spread of downfield and short passes was very un-Heupel-esque last year. And I don't know if it was Milton specifically. I don't know if it was the wide receiver room was desperately thin at times and maybe those guys couldn't get separation. But it felt like just a huge dynamic of their game was unavailable to them last year. And so the hope is, with Nico coming in, he's got a little bit more confidence, a little bit more processing than Milton, can make those intermediate throws and also get those one-on-one balls in that classic Heupel fashion in a situation where you're catching it for a big play or you're getting 15 for a pass interference. Tennessee just didn't have that element to their game, and you absolutely need that last year. So I like McCoy coming back. I like the Tulane transfer, Chris Braswell, over 2 yards per route run, pretty productive on not a great offense last year for Tulane, could come in and really lift it. You know, Squirrel White being the number one receiver, you want to see him a lot more flex, 94% in the slot. You obviously want to see kind of that guy be an ancillary option, absolutely a weapon. So their wide receiver room can stay a little bit healthy. I think that they're going to be able to move kind of nicely into that upper tier. And it does feel like the natural progression of things that they have actually the quarterback. He's not a veteran guy. He's not, you know, a retooled project like Milton and Herndon Hooker were before him. He is, you know, five-star pedigree, the guy. So really excited to see what he can do in that Heupel offense with healthy receivers and see what they can do with those intermediate and deep shots that really felt inaccessible to Milton last year.
Yeah, and I think, Nico, if you're looking at flyers and, you know, most people want to take longer shots than, you know, 18-1, which is offered at DraftKings. But I think Nico's an interesting one to look at in the Heisman market because, you know, we're going into a new world once again of the expanded playoffs. So you look at this schedule, Tennessee, you know, on the road at Oklahoma, home to Bama, at Georgia. They'll be an underdog in those three games. But outside of that, they should be a favorite in the remaining nine. As mentioned, their win total sitting at 9. And if this team makes the playoff, I think it opens up the door for more players, Parker, to be in the Heisman discussion. And when you think about what Hendon Hooker was capable of doing in 2022, albeit with elite receivers, but, you know, Nico being in his second year in the system, played well in the bowl game. You don't want to take too much away from the bowl game, but, you know, let's be honest. That was an Iowa defense that's really impressive, and he was able to throw up, you know, I think 4 touchdowns in that game. So if we're talking to that 18-1 ballpark in what feels like a wide-open Heisman discussion this year, I think Nico is certainly worth a look when you think about, you know, the pieces that they have at the wide receiver position. You know, they brought in some transfers. I think they brought in a tight end from Notre Dame Holden Stays that had some flashes last year. They also brought in, I think, a transfer from Alabama at the tight end position. So they got some pieces, no doubt. And I think with Nico seeming to fit this Josh Heupel system a little bit better, I think 18-1 is maybe worth a look if you're trying to, you know, build up your Heisman portfolio.
Yeah, losing Hyatt's going to hurt in the running back as well. Yep. But, you know, Dylan Sampson in small samples last year did really, really great. Had a lot of breakaway runs and has the potential to, you know, absolutely be there as that punishing running back as a counterpoint to the pass piece. I meant to drop this for Ole Miss because I calculated it and want to show off my stats. But Tennessee has the second easiest conference schedule in the SEC if you take into account opponent win totals. So average win totals of conference opponents, Tennessee is second, just in front of Texas, 6.38. So very favorable schedule for them as well. You know, Heupel is going to put up numbers. I think all of that points to, you know, and the market is catching up, like you mentioned, Nico being a little bit deserving of some of this Heisman hype.
Yeah, 15-1 at Circa, 18-1 at DraftKings. Look around, see what the best numbers are out there. But with Josh Heupel, I'm not ready to say that I was absolutely wrong, but it's trending towards me being wrong on this hire because I wasn't impressed by Heupel. It felt like when he got to UCF, things started to go in the wrong direction. But obviously, his second here at Tennessee was fantastic. And who knows if Hendon Hooker stays healthy if they don't win the national championship? But heck of an offense, to say the least, there for Tennessee. Win total sitting at 9. Staying in the SEC, a team that intrigues you and intrigues me to be a bit, and also scares the crap out of me because they open up the season against Notre Dame at home. It's Texas A&M. And Texas A&M, as mentioned, open up against Notre Dame, where, depending on where you look, either a pick or a 1-point favorite at home there at Kyle Field. You know, you look at the schedule, they do not have Alabama on it this year. They do not have Georgia on it this year. They do finish up the year against Texas, which is kind of fun to have that back in tow. Home games against Missouri, LSU, and Texas, that works in their favor. The neutral site against Arkansas. So, you know, interesting to look at this schedule. Mike Elko steps in. I'm very big on Mike Elko. Thought of what he did at Duke was very impressive. Whole new ball game down there at Texas A&M. But as we all know, Parker, it's not completely new to him. He had been at Texas A&M before leaving to go take the head coaching job at Duke. You bring in Colin Klein as their offensive coordinator from Kansas State. Jay Bateman, to be honest, I'm not that big on Jay Bateman as a defensive coordinator. That said, Mike Elko is one of the best D coordinators out there, so he'll do plenty of work. And they got some pieces on that defense, no doubt. But what's fascinating, and for you, a person who takes in so much data and kind of spits it out, it's A&M brought in a ton for the portal, lost a ton in the portal, right? So what do you do, right, with all of that? You lose Stewart, the wide receiver. He goes off to Oregon. You lose Walter Nolan, who we mentioned, to Ole Miss. So a lot of pieces walked out the door, but a lot of pieces came in the door. What do you make of Texas A&M right now? Win total sitting at 8.5. To make the playoff is plus 220 for Giga Maggie.
Yeah, Texas A&M is the ultimate, like, what-if team, because what if Mike Elko comes in, has a talent advantage in 9 games, I think, plays a consistent brand of football, Connor Wegman stays healthy the entire year, Colin Klein helps them cut out some of that undisciplined play we saw out of Jimbo, whether that was paralysis from the, you know, the numerous options in Jimbo's 5,000-page playbook, or that was they couldn't install it all, or they would just had some bad injury luck last year, which frankly they did. Can they play a little bit more stable? Tim, they were 5th in disaster plays, so drop snaps, quarterback fumbles, that kind of stuff, grouping all together. Texas A&M was 5th, really sloppy, really undisciplined. You expect some regression to the mean and some improvement with Elko there in, you know, in charge of the program and in the culture. And so I think that they're a really interesting team just because of the sheer mass of talent. Last year, one of their big issues was kind of finishing drives. They played 54% of their offensive snaps, almost 55, in opponent territory. They were moving the ball and getting there. They couldn't close the door. Klein comes in, can solidify. We saw his offenses at Kansas State finish drives extremely well. Wegman, you know, talented in multiple ways. We've seen Klein take less talented quarterbacks than Wegman and make them very, very good. So I think the ceiling is absolutely there. I think they'll have some talent. You look at the schedule, speaking of the win totals, you know, they're 7.12. That's 6th best in the SEC. So is a little bit favorable. I really think that a playoff flyer on Texas A&M is not insane, especially because of even if Jimbo had stayed, you expect some regression with injury. You expect some regression with kind of the nonsense. But removing that kind of X factor in favor of a guy like Mike Elko, who's known for the culture, known for the consistency there, I'm really scared at the level of which I'm talking myself at a Texas A&M there. Just because, again, critical mass of talent, a lot of nonsense last year, and an offensive coordinator who has a track record of developing talent really, really well to suit Wegman's abilities. So I like Texas A&M as a flyer here for the playoff. I don't think that's insane at all. That being said, if they do go 8-4, they do go 7-5, get better towards the end of the season, that's great for Elko too. Like, I think Texas A&M is just, the expectations are so low this year where there's a lot of ways that Elko can have a good season.
You know, just looking at game of the year lines right now, they're only an underdog in one game, and that's Texas at home, but there's a ton of toss-ups, right? Notre Dame week 1, as mentioned, pick or -1. Florida week 3 on the road, -4. Arkansas neutral, -11.5. Missouri at home, -4. LSU at home, -2. Auburn on the road, -2. And then Texas to close out, 4-point underdog. So as of right now, things can change, obviously. They're only a underdog in one game this year, are the Aggies, but a ton of toss-up games. And yeah, I mean, I get, you know, the kind of the roulette chip type, so to speak, on Texas A&M, especially. I mean, think about what those odds will do. If you are in the camp of Texas A&M can win that opener against Notre Dame, where you've got familiarity with Riley Leonard going up against Mike Elko, who's going to know Mike Elko better, or vice versa, Riley Leonard better than Mike Elko. So that's a really fascinating game. Nighttime down there at Kyle Field. How is, you know, Notre Dame going to gel with a new quarterback? So what do those odds look like if they win that game, Parker? A Notre Dame team that's preseason top 10, you know, is -165 to make the playoff. Win total 10.5 or 10. If A&M pulls out that win where they are either a pick 'em or -1 favorite, those odds at plus 220, do they get cut in half? Because now you're looking at a team that has a huge non-conference victory, plays in the best conference in college football. So all this is being said is, if you like Texas A&M in week 1, I think what you said, look at them to make the playoff, because those odds, I think, get cut to plus 110, maybe, you know, I mean, because then you could afford two losses in the SEC because you have this win over Notre Dame, a Notre Dame team whose floor is probably 9 wins, maybe even 10 wins.
Yeah. Can I point out on the Notre Dame game exactly what I'm watching for Texas A&M, which is going to tell me so much about their season. They're losing Bryce Foster. They're losing Layden Robinson in the inside. And Notre Dame is returning Howard Cross and Riley Mills, both guys 11% or higher pressure rate on the inside on IDL pass rushes. We know those, you know, Howard Cross is multiple, can go to different positions. I think that Notre Dame is really going to mess with this offensive line. They're going to have two or three new starters, I think, there for Texas A&M. If that unit comes out and looks consistent against a very fierce pass rush, a pass defense that ranked number one nationally in opponent adjusted EPA last year, that's going to, you know, the moon is the ceiling for Texas A&M there. That's really the matchup I'm watching, that not just for that single game, but if Texas A&M can handle that, I feel like they're super well poised for the rest of their schedule.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't see any totals out for week one yet, but I think that is a game where initial feel would be a little bit towards the under in that one, because Notre Dame's defense is going to be incredibly loaded this year. Tons of veterans, year three of the Al Golden defense there. And then, as you mentioned, I think Notre Dame's biggest weakness is their offensive line. And you've got a pretty scary front there for Texas A&M. So, you know,
Nick Stourton coming in with two new tackles. Yeah, that's going to be a trench battle that is fascinating on both sides of the ball there for both of those teams. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that'll be a fun one, week one, where I'll be chewing my nails the entire time. We'll get to the Big 12 here momentarily, but let's go into a little G5 land, and we'll start with Boise State. Boise State is believed to be, by most, the best per power ratings G5 team in the country. They're a plus 125 favorite to win the Mountain West. Spencer Danielson gets the full-time gig. They bring back Dirk Cutter for what? His third go-round as the offensive coordinator there. Malachi Nelson comes in as a transfer from USC. There's a lot of excitement there. Ashton Gentry, one of the best running backs in the country. They were able to convince him to stay, Parker. So Boise State, this is a team win total sitting at 9. They do have to go to Oregon week 2. Week 1, they go to Statesboro to take on Georgia Southern. Kind of an under-the-radar, interesting week 1 showdown between two G5 squads. So the boys on the blue, what do we expect from the Broncos this year?
Talk about having a high floor. I mean, Boise State, if you just wrote the facts of what happened to their season last year, you'd think this is like a 4-8 team, and they won the conference, Tim. Yeah. I think that they've got a big talent advantage. They lose Eric McAllister to TCU, wide receiver, who is their leading target, but they bring in Cam Camper from Indiana, who, you know, over two yards per route run, get a big body, 205, I think, guy, can give them that downfield option. That coupled with the tight end that they're bringing in, whose name just completely went off of my head there, but they bring in a tight end, and they've got Janty, who has 3 yards per route run, over 3 yards per route run as a receiver out of the backfield. And they love Sire Gaines, this freshman running back who's come in and given them a body as well. Wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of two running back options, really spreading teams out, giving Nelson, you know, three layers, potentially four, if you can get Janty downfield with the tight end. Cawthorn, maybe, I think is who I'm thinking of there. But, all that to say,
Louder?
I think their offense,
Matthew
Louder, Louder was there. I just did the BetUS show. I might be thinking of a different team. Forgive me there. But either way, you've got Janty, you've got Gaines, and you've got Cam Camper coming in. So some really good options there at the wide receiver and all around to get, you know, Nelson a bunch of completions early on, get them kind of rolling. I think that their multiplicity on offense is going to be so good that's just going to be a huge benefit for them. So I like Boise State quite a lot. I think that, you know, you get some of the locker room noise down, you get some of the turmoil down, you get consistency in the offseason, even with some turnover and returning production. And I think Nelson's set up to be one of the better wide receivers, or excuse me, quarterbacks in the country. And I would worry about Ashton Janty getting more attention after his kind of breakout year, but with Gaines looking like he does at the running back position, I think that gives them a really long leash to just be such a solid offensive team that has these kind of P5 guys at these positions that they're absolutely a team that I'm really, really interested in a win total over, just because I think they'll be more talented than almost everyone on their schedule, Oregon aside. And they, you know, they were so bad last year and they still won the conference.
Yeah, I mean, the run that they had at the end of the year, I think a lot of us, to getting into the weeds, kind of wanted to see them against San Jose State in the Mountain West Championship. Even though UNLV kind of came out of nowhere and had a hell of a year, they got some talented players. That'll be a fun one here. Friday night game, October 25th, Boise State at UNLV should be a lot of fun. I'm glad that game will be kind of on an island by itself, getting a lot of eyeballs. But, you know, that is a team that's the one thing that I worry, and it's not from a player per standpoint, because I agree with you. I think this is the most talented team in that conference. It's just Spencer Danielson, right? Year one, how is he going to be, you know, not to bring everything back to Notre Dame, but this feels a little bit like Marcus Freeman getting hired, where it was like, hey, this is our guy. We want him. And he's a lifer at Boise. I do like the fact that they brought back Dirk Cutter. I think that really helps for the offense. He's an adult, coached an NFL franchise. I think Dirk Cutter coming back for however long it is, him being there this year, I think really, if you had some uneasiness about Danielson, I think Dirk Cutter returning is a really big asset for him to kind of be like, that being his, you know, binky, so to speak, be like, hey, Dirk, what do we do here? You know, so that the dynamic there, I think, will really be beneficial for Boise State. The two best conferences in the G5 are the Mountain West and the AAC. In the AAC, their best team, just from a power rating standpoint, is Memphis. But Memphis, man, at Florida State, at UCF, or USF, excuse me, at UTSA, and then the finale at Tulane. Tulane's a team that you're intrigued by. Win total sitting at 7.5 at DraftKings, 8 at Circa. They bring in Ty Thompson, the transfer from Oregon. And, you know, you lose Willie Fritz as he leaves to go to Houston. But then you bring in Troy's head coach, where, you know, I'm not going to say it's not a massive drop off, but I mean, he's one of the better G5 coaches out there. So Tulane, how about the stretch, though, Parker, that they have early on in the year? Home to Kansas State, at Oklahoma, and then they got to go to Lafayette to take on Louisiana. So a tricky non-conference start to the year. No UTSA on the schedule. They get both South Florida and Memphis at home. They're plus 390 to win the AAC. What do you make of the Green Wave?
Yeah, I think I definitely like them over a 7.5 is what I've seen the lines there more than anything else. And it's really just kind of on the merits. That Oklahoma game, I think, is actually really, really interesting because Oklahoma has a brand new offensive line. And the reason I like Tulane so much is John Summerall, with three guys who are in the top 20 of pressure rate on the defensive line. They get the ULM transfer Aiden Huntington. They have Cam Hamilton there, and then Patrick Jenkins on the defensive line. I think they're just absolutely going to maul folks up front. They have four new guys in the secondary there, but again, with Summerall, I'm a little more confident about defensive integration there. On offense, is Ty Thompson going to start? I think Kai Horton might actually beat him out. Either way, they've got decent options there. They'll have to replace Braswell, but Summerall's teams, you know, did the margins really well, played good defense, and their offense just didn't do bad things. And I think that's enough for Tulane to have a really solid season and compete for the AAC. So on the strength of Summerall's resume, on the fact that Fritz had great bones and a great foundation at Tulane, Summerall's coming into that. So I definitely give him a boost in year one for that. And the fact that they just have an absolute monster of a defensive line, clearly the best defensive line in this conference. I think they're really, really well poised to play a consistent brand of football that looked a lot like Troy last year and will really frustrate some teams. So like you mentioned with some of that scheduling is a little bit of a grind, non-conference, but I think they could absolutely sneak into the AAC championship just in the experience and pedigree alone, with Summerall having that experience of competing at a high level and with the good bones there. That Memphis game will be super interesting, whether that's, you know, whether it means something or whether what was it 2 years ago they played back? They played back to back. And, yep, you know, all that weirdness. But I think missing UTSA really, really helps. And they've got a long runway to that Memphis game of games they should absolutely win. So you stay healthy against Kansas State and Oklahoma. And, you know, an over is absolutely teed up for this team just on the strength of this defense.
All right, let's wrap on this because the Big 12 is so fascinating. We had Paul Stone on the podcast last week going through the Big 12 and kind of his angle of looking at it. And I want to get to your hypothetical as well that you had mentioned to me before we started recording. But you look at the Big 12 and Utah's at plus 320. You know, every other Power 5 or Power 4 conference, Ohio State's plus 160, Georgia's plus 190, Florida State's plus 280. So this is believed to be, and I would agree, the most wide open conference from a Power Four standpoint out there. So I think there's benefits to the conference this year when you're looking to bet, you know, who's going to win it, look at some long shots. I don't want to lead the witness at all. So are there a couple teams, Parker, that maybe you're, you know, eyeing up in that futures pool for the Big 12?
Yeah, I'm definitely less interested in the favorites there just because I think there's so much uncertainty. You know, Utah, what's their offense actually going to look like? I know Keithy's coming back as a tight end, and Cam Rising, if he's healthy, that gives them about as much experience as possible. And we've seen the Kyle Whittingham defense succeed on multiple levels of play, and they might actually get a little bit of an easier draw this year. Kansas State makes me a little bit nervous. Avery Johnson, I like the tools, but I need to see more out of the passing game. They lose some impact guys on the offensive line. There could be some growing pains without Klein there. So I'm less interested in that. You go to like Kansas and you think the offensive potential is there. Can Jalen Daniels stay healthy an entire season? Is the defensive depth going to hold up like it has the last couple of years? I'm not sure. I get really interested when you start to talk about somebody like UCF. KJ Jefferson, Penny Boone in the backfield, Tim, that's almost 500 pounds a man in a Gus Malzahn offense. I mean, that is very intriguing to me. UCF, this is a good pull. UCF, only team in FBS last year that averaged 3 yards before contact on designed runs. So not including QB scrambles where you know you're going to get a lot of space there. On designed runs, they just absolutely got a huge push. Their offensive line play under Herb Hand is really, really good. I have, in my own kind of parlance, removed the dark horse from UCF as a dark horse contender in the Big 12. I think they're absolutely a contender. They do have Utah, but otherwise the schedule breaks up really, really nicely. The other one to look out for me is Oklahoma State has a level of continuity that I don't know that we've seen in recent college football, at least in the Big 12 recently, even more so maybe than TCU in 2022. That offensive line is super, super stout. And you know, on defense, they've got some absolute playmakers. So I think that tier is really, really interesting to me. But there's all these different paths for some of these teams. You know, Colorado, if it clicks, West Virginia, can they replicate that? That could be kind of outside poised. Iowa State with a ton of continuity coming back as well. All of those are on the table. My question with this continuity that we were kind of batting around, Tim, is like over under 1.5 Big 12 playoff teams, not just what would you take? Cause I think you would smash the under,
yes.
But if you were going to make the line on that, where would you put the odds? I think there's some interesting paths here that you have to consider.
Yeah, and it's such a great question to contemplate because it is 1.5. I think that's the fair number, but the juice is the interesting part, right? Because I initially said, I don't know, minus 300. That was probably too aggressive. But I look at this conference and how close so many of these teams are and how many different people have opinions on you know, who's going to emerge and how to bet it, right? Whether it be Iowa State from the continuity standpoint. You know, Arizona keeps Noah Fifita. Brent Brennan comes in, a guy that I love him. I mean, he's just a winner.
Unequivocally, Brent Brennan is a winner. Yeah, absolutely.
Regularly at San Jose State, which is one of the hardest jobs in the country. And, you know, last year, I think they started 1-5 and still made a bowl. And, you know, because of some crazy tiebreakers and some archaic tiebreakers, to be honest, they did not make the Mountain West Championship game. And he goes down there to Arizona. So, you know, you mentioned Colorado, like, you know, all whatever you think about Colorado, they have the most biggest NFL prospect in Shedeur Sanders at quarterback on that roster. Right. So that said, so get back to the question. I think you make it around minus, I don't know. I would be like minus 200. And I would still probably look that way, Parker, because we don't know what the committee's going to do. And I opened the podcast talking about it where we don't know what they're going to do with the G5, right? Because Liberty's schedule's embarrassingly soft, but what if they go undefeated and Boise State has two losses? Who do they put in? Last year they put in Liberty over SMU. You look at the SEC, you look at the Big Ten, how loaded those conferences are, and then you look at the Big 12. And I know they say they never look at rankings before the season, but they do. And none of these teams are going to be top 15. Now, there's going to be a bunch in 15 to 25. I would make it probably minus 200, you know, plus 180 to the over.
Yeah.
I really think the team who wins this conference is such in great spot because they're going to get a bye. But I would be pretty surprised, Parker, if we see a Big 12 team playing the first weekend of the playoff.
I think I agree. And certainly to your point about, you know, polls and all that is like, at the very least, they shape the narratives of the season that the committee has going into when they start considering data. So I think they absolutely matter, even if they say they don't look at them and the Big 12 is at a disadvantage. I really only see a couple paths where you get two in. So one, it's all chalk. Utah and Kansas Yep. State are both, you know, undefeated or one loss going into the Big 12 championship and they both get in, right? The other way you see this is like UCF or Kansas or Arizona is a two-loss team that sneaks into the Big 12 championship and beats the undefeated Utah or Kansas State. I think you absolutely need a team that gets the bid quote-unquote stolen for this to happen. And so how much do you believe in those favorites if another team kind of sneaks in and gets it? I think I would agree with your thought on kind of the under. It is interesting to look at the asymmetric schedule where you could get some of these teams going in. I don't think it's going to be a situation like the SEC where, you know, a team misses the Big 12 championship and doesn't and makes the playoff. I don't think that's going to happen at all, just the level of competition. But if you see somebody like an Arizona or a Colorado get hot late in the season and upset a Kansas State or a Utah there, that's where you're going to see that second. That's where you're going to see the second bid, I think.
I wanted to go back to Oklahoma State real quickly because they have been kind of that very popular team. Paul Stone, who I mentioned on the podcast last week, loved the over. He said it was his favorite over bet so far of the year from a win total standpoint, which I totally understand, where you think about what they bring back, the fact that Mike Gundy always gets the best out of his teams. I believe they're top five in production returning, top 10, somewhere in that ballpark. You bring back Ollie Gordon, Alan Bowman's like 105 years old. So, you know, you get all that. But the question I want to ask you is the start to this Big 12 schedule. They open up the Big 12 portion of the schedule, Parker, home to Utah, and then they play Kansas State on the road. And, you know, it's, hey, the nature of the game is gambling, right? That's what we do. So you might be gambling a little bit, but instead of buying Oklahoma State at 10-1 or 12-1 now, how do we think they fare in those two games? Because if they lose one, maybe even lose both, then the schedule really softens up. West Virginia at BYU, at Baylor, Arizona State at TCU, Texas Tech at home, at Colorado, your two toughest games remaining would be Texas Tech and, you know, probably at TCU or at Colorado, but you get Colorado late. So do you wait on Oklahoma State or do you take like a half unit position on them at 12-1, which is out there? And maybe they lose one of those two games. You get a better number the start of October when, you know, historically speaking, I mean, Oklahoma State last year, they got their ass kicked by South Alabama. They lose to Iowa State. And then they just got hot and only lost one conference game the rest of the way out.
Yeah, and I don't even know what was going on with that, man. Ollie Gordon had like 30 carries in the first three games. Like, what are we doing here, you know? And I don't know if he needed to get in shape and move on. I feel like the one truism I know in college football today is that, like, the more you try to put Mike Gundy in a box, like, the less you can. You know, he likes winning differently and is one of the most successful and prolific coaches, both against the spread and overall in college football. I do wonder if you take an Oklahoma position, if you don't bet against them for Utah and Kansas State, and try to level that out a little bit and then know that the price is going to go down, even if it's unjustified. Even if I project them to lose to Utah and Kansas State, I know that the markets are going to go down on them and I can potentially get a better price there with that, you know, two buys late, nothing really that worries me in terms of back-to-back overall. Although, I mean, you could argue last year, like they should have lost that BYU game, dropped interception that could have changed the course of that overtime. And there's some issues there, but I think the continuity in the offseason, I don't think they'll get off to a slow start. I do think there's a possibility to not tie up all your money, try to reclaim some of it with Utah and Kansas State, and then buy back in on the lower side of things, because they can absolutely get to the Big 12 championship losing that Utah and Kansas State game for sure.
And going back to Arizona, you know, Noah Fifita stays. We talked about Brent Brennan bringing in Dino Babers as the offensive coordinator. Maybe he gets back to his Bowling Green ways, and you know, we're airing it out all over the place. So Arizona is going to be a fun team. I mean, that week three Friday night showdown against Kansas State, which I believe is a non-conference game. So it does not affect the futures market, but that was, I guess, a pre-scheduled game. So yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, and good for Dino Babers, man. Some vitamin D, some sunlight, a little bit, you know, getting out of the dark up there in Syracuse. And he has some good tools to play with, which, like, not to besmirch specific college players, but, like, look what he did with Garrett Schrader and made that happen on a team that just was not very talented. I think Dino getting back to his air raid ways, having a couple fun tools there, that's some good offensive firepower. They've got some playmakers on defense as well. They bring in Trey Smith. Who follows him, who was really productive on a very, very feisty San Jose State defense. They're really fun. I mean, if Jed Fish was still there, I think they would be the clear favorite in the Big 12. But obviously with some turnover, you're going to have some questions there. But they're another team. Wouldn't surprise me if they got hot, lost a couple games early, and they could be one of those that could steal the bid or be that second team by winning the conference. Yep.
Yeah. And they get the late night game week one, baby. They take on Bronco Mendenhall in New Mexico, where they're laying 30 right now. To open up the season are the Wildcats against New Mexico. So, hey, man, it can't come soon enough. Before we let you run, I want to circle back to Boise State, a week one line that did jump to you. You mentioned that Boise State has to go on the road to Statesboro. I never like to say week one is a look ahead, but boy, you go to Oregon in week two, hopefully no peeking ahead. But what do you make of that line, Boise State at Georgia Southern? Broncos laying 10 right now.
Yeah, I honestly like Boise State there. I think they know the stakes of the national perception and know that Oregon's going to be a really tough game to win. And I think their hope is to stay healthy and compete against Oregon for the resume. Georgia Southern's a game you've got to win substantially. You know, 106th in EPA per pass last year, 81st in EPA per rush on defense. I think this is a team that's really vulnerable on the defensive side of the ball, super pass heavy as well. Their quarterback situation doesn't look great. An Indiana backup, I think, is going to start. And they pass, you know, third most of anybody in college football last year with rush, you know, thinking about rush rate over expected. And so I think there's a lot of ways for this Georgia Southern offense to stall out, a lot of quality reps for a Boise defense that's still trying to gel. Like I mentioned, the multiplicity on offense, I think it's just going to stretch a Georgia Southern defense that isn't excellent on one side of the ball. You know, if they had a good run defense and struggled at the pass, maybe they could bottle up Janty and force Nelson to play in his first game. But I think Boise is going to score with impunity, even on the road, even in the August heat in Georgia. I like Boise here to make a statement.
Parker, you're the man. Always love picking your brain. I know you're heading on vacation, so I'm glad we were able to catch up. And before you take a little respite, before we all get into the grind of the season, much appreciated, sir. And we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks to Parker Fleming. Great stuff. Always appreciate his insight. Follow him on Twitter at StatsOWAR. Wanted to close up with a couple just odds and ends as we bid farewell here on another week of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. You know, we talked about Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Texas A&M, and he alluded to the schedule for Tennessee and how it is, based off of just projections, pretty manageable for an SEC team. What is not manageable is the Florida schedule. This thing, and we've mentioned it before, but now we've got point spreads for the majority of their games. It is just absolutely brutal for Sunbelt Billy entering year three, where he is firmly on the hot seat. Bill Conley, in his article, put out what the average top five team would do against Florida's schedule. And he said they would average 9.1 wins. Kelly Ford went a little bit further. He said the average top 12 team, what would they do against this Florida schedule? He said they would average, based off of his models, 6.9 wins. Florida, who won five games a year ago, their win total at DraftKings is 4.5. At Circa, it's 5. Even money to the over, minus 120 to the under. Let's look at their schedule. Miami to open, 3:30 Eastern. They're a 3-point underdog. Then they get FCS Samford. Then they get Texas A&M at home. They're a 4-point underdog. Glass half full, you could go 3-0. Those are two toss-up games and an FCS opponent. Glass half empty, you 1-2. Then you go to Stark Vegas. Jeff Lebby's squad, really challenging schedule. But for Mississippi State, isn't that going to be, like, outside of Ole Miss, the biggest opportunity that they have this year? I'm not expecting much from Mississippi State there in year number one, but for Mississippi State, that is a huge, huge game for the Bulldogs coming off of a non-con of Eastern Kentucky at Arizona State and Toledo. After they play Florida, they go to Texas and go to Georgia. So I think this one's a little important there for Jeff Lebby's squad to try to get that victory. So should Florida win that game? Yeah, probably. Road game, Stark Vegas, Cal Bell's going to be humming around. And I think you'd rather play Mississippi State later in the season if they're, 3-8, 4-7. Okay, four games in, still all toss-ups. Where are you? Bye week, Central Florida. We just heard Parker Fleming talk about Central Florida, a team that he likes as a long shot, 12-1, to win the AAC. You got KJ Jefferson down there, Penny Boone, Max Studd. What's the game of the year line? Circa hung a 6. So we're talking about a true power rating of 3 difference between Central Florida and Florida. If this game's in Orlando at the Bounce House, is this game a pick? Maybe -1 Florida? So another toss-up. Then it gets real. At Tennessee, 10-point underdog. Home to Kentucky. Georgia cocktail party, 21-point underdog. At Texas, 18-point underdog. Home to LSU, 5.5-point underdog. Ole Miss, 6.5-point underdog. And you wrap up the season on the road at Florida State, 12.5-point underdog. If Sunbelt Billy and the Gators get to 6 wins, don't even talk about firing him. Talk about giving him coach of the year. That schedule is brutal. A non-con of Miami, Florida State, and UCF? Holy smokes. They are not messing around down there. Speaking of circa game of the year lines, they came out over the weekend. Didn't see a ton of movement, but worth noting that there were 4 games with Wisconsin in them, and the line moved against him in all of them. Wisconsin opened up an 8-point underdog at home against Alabama. Line moved to 9. Opened a 5-point underdog at home against Penn State. Line moved to 6. Opened up a 2-point underdog at Iowa. Line moved to 3. And opened a 9-point underdog at home against Oregon. Line moved to 11. So it does feel like early indications are that sharp bettors and at least the odds makers may be a little bit off on the Badgers entering this year. Other than that, no real massive moves. The biggest move, Ole Miss, Mississippi State moved from 19 out to 21. Notre Dame against Louisville, revenge spot for the Irish, moved from 8 out to 9.5. Notre Dame also moved from a 3-point favorite out to a 5-point favorite against Florida State. Notre Dame, from a scheduling standpoint, we opened up the show with it last week, much different than last year. They played Louisville in a 7th consecutive game after they had played Ohio State and Duke down to the wire, walked into a night game against Louisville. It was not good. This year, they'll be playing a couple MAC squads prior to their game against Louisville. It will be a spot where they will certainly be ready to go against the Cardinals, even though betting against Jeff Brohm as an underdog is not a super fun endeavor. Notre Dame, Florida State, that line moved 2 points. Bye week for Notre Dame prior to the Florida State game, early November, certainly advantageous there for the Irish, I guess, from a scheduling standpoint. All right, wrapping on this, 2 things. Like to see it. Hawaii was 17-point underdogs last week when we talked about it and played the clip of Timmy Chang, down to 16.5 at DraftKings. Get that CLV, baby. 15.5 at Westgate. So Hawaii taking some money in that week 1 game at home against UCLA, not USC. And speaking of USC, I blame my partner, Jonathan Von Tobel, for my mistake last week when I was going through Notre Dame's schedule. I called USC quarterback Miller Moss Mason Miller. Mason Miller, of course, the flame-throwing closer of the Oakland Athletics. So I blame you, JVT, because you make me talk baseball more than I would like. You talk about it all the time. Mason Miller is awesome, by the way, of the Oakland A's, but had to make a correction there. USC's quarterback is not Mason Miller. It's Miller Moss, and I'm fascinated to see what Miller Moss can be. this year as the full-time starter out there for Lincoln Riley, taking on LSU week one, where they're a 6-point underdog. All right, that's going to do it for this week's program. Please follow me on Twitter at @1TimMurray. Also, give us a 5-star review. Give us a rating. Give us that 5-star rating and a review, please. And subscribe to the podcast. Let's keep it rolling. We will have a show for you. Kelly Ford and his power ratings and his models. He will jump on the podcast early next week. So looking forward to chopping it up with him. So look out for that. But thanks to Parker Fleming for his breakdown. Follow him on Twitter at @StatsOWAR. Shouts to Jimmy Ott real quickly, my guy down there on ESPN Baton Rouge. We taped something with Jimmy talking some SEC football, and that was on my end. Tap the chest, bad pass. Forgot to plug in the old microphone on my end. So my apologies to Jimmy. We'll get him back on the podcast here in the short future. So my bad on that one. We were talking some SEC. So that was the host error on that one. But that's going to do it for the podcast. We will be back next week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.